You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Hello, welcome back to the INCJ news desk for 2025. And we are really fortunate to be joined because I got the times wrong. And I'm really glad he's been able to drop in with us. So it's Shahzad, tell us, pronounce the rest of your name so I hear it properly and then can remember it.
No, sure. It seems complicated, but it's a little bit easier. It's phonetically Karbidwala. Karbidwala.
Karbidwala. Do you know, I'd written that down like that and I can still never get it right. So, but there we are. Well, welcome anyway. And we're joined with my colleague.
Shao Yip.
I'm getting better.
Very good.
Yes. My language skills are terrible anyway. And you're here to talk today about PVS. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's the Prisoner Visitation and Support. Is it a not-for-profit or a service, or tell us a bit about it?
Sure. No, and guys, I appreciate you guys having me on. And yes, so PVS is an acronym, stands for Prisoner Visitation and Support. I joined their organization close to 10 years ago. And our mission, I sit on the board of directors, our mission is we are a nonprofit organization founded in 1968. And our overall mission is to support the incarcerated that are in federal institutions. So we have a dedicated team of about 250 volunteers, all across North America. And we go around federal institutions in North America visiting the unfortunate who have been imprisoned.
I mean, it's a big, North America's got, the USA's got a big prison population. So 250 people doesn't scratch the surface, really. Is there a priority? So what would be have you got a particular focus within that then, kind of you're looking for people who maybe don't get visitation or have contact and networks that are maintaining that support?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Rob. We want to reach out to as many inmates as possible, right? Unfortunately, our capacity is limited to the amount of people that we have visited, right? This is not a difficult ask, right? It's not easy walking into a federal institution with the confines and speaking to the imprisoned and the less fortunate. So one of our main focuses in PVS is to get additional funding, and then B, increase our recruiting base. So we are able to tackle the people that are eligible for PVS visits, that we could get to those people. So part of this is to create awareness for PVS, right? We have so many dedicated people that serve this organization, but we have not met what we feel is our quota of reaching out to those inmates that have been in prison. So Rob, having me on speaking about PVS is huge from a point of view of building awareness and letting people know who we are and then recruiting more people to potentially join PVS.
We've spoken to a number of people. Yes, okay. Sure, jump in. Yeah, go.
I just want to clarify, please. Are you visiting only the prisoners who's not got any other visitors? Like, is there any kind of criteria to who you visit and support?
That's a great question. No. So they may be getting visitors from family and friends, and that's okay. The more engagement that they get with the outside world is better. I mean, I believe there are statistics to show that if you are visiting inmates that are getting outside visitors, it reduces the recidivism, I'm saying that wrong, rate, right? Even though that's not PVS's mission, but it influences it, right? So it's a good thing.
Great. Definitely agree, because I've done several projects with drama workshops in prison. And sometimes it's not just it's not even the content that they really appreciate. It's the fact that there's an outside group that's not related to them and taken an interest and treat them with respect. That itself, it's really important for them already. The other question I have is there a gender difference in terms of volunteers? My assumption is there'll be more women than men that's interested to volunteer. Is that the case?
It's a good diversity and inclusion question. You know, I'm not sure. It's a great question. I'm not sure what the statistics are behind it, but I know sitting on the board and being part of the governance process of meeting a lot of our visitors, we have very good diversity. And we also have transgender community within PVS too, which is pretty amazing, you know. Would you say that the majority are women? No. We have, I would come close to saying we're almost a 50-50 split, which is cool. We got good diversity.
I've noticed on the website that the PVS was set up from a Quaker tradition. And is that still an active part of PVS, or is that something that was kind of when it was first developed?
Yeah, it was first developed like that, but then we've evolved and adapted towards the norms and things like that. So PVS has been around for quite some time, but we started out small, and then slowly with the adoption and consumption of PVS, it's been growing. And as we get more involved within the bureau, with the Bureau of Prisons, and getting accepted more into federal institutions, we're kind of going away from that, I would say.
Because my experience of Quakerism is that it isn't proselytizing. It doesn't go into prisons to convert people. It doesn't have a religious agenda. It's quite neutral. From my experience in the UK, for Quaker organisations, they're not, you know, it's not, it doesn't try and pursue an agenda. But there's two questions that kind of that come to mind. Is one, the relationship with, as you described, in the Bureau, prisons. So having credibility and being able to sustain a relationship that the service that you offer is legitimate in terms of the federal prison service. Or the individual prison service, and then secondly, with the people that you're visiting, on their own terms. So, just talk about the institutional side of that first, and then maybe we can talk about the cultural side and how you interact with people who are within the prison system and are, incarcerated themselves.
Sure. Yeah, and that's where our role as a PVS visitor is a little bit tricky, right? Because we have our own bylaws within our organization, but then we also have to meet the bylaws of the Bureau of Prisons. So we have two sets of bylaws we have to obey. We can't obstruct that. So for an example of that, Rob, is when an inmate gets released, we've established a really great relationship. I mean, imagine you develop a relationship with somebody, that human instinct comes into play where they've been released now. Now you want to enjoy, I wouldn't say the fruits of your labor, but the work that you put in to potentially help this person come out of prison. You want to enjoy, have dinner, lunch, see them. Are by PVS bylaws through the Bureau, we can't do that. So our engagement is in within the institution. Outside of that, it can't happen. That being said, I mean, that's a little bit emotionally challenging, right? But within the culture of the Bureau of Prisons, they're very much accepted, which is really nice. Walk in to a federal institution, they know who we are, because there's a lot of governance that's involved in walking into a federal institution. They're not just going to let anyone in. You have to go, you have to do a specific training. You have to make sure that you're abiding by their rules. And typically when I walk into a federal institution, the correctional officers, they know me, and it's a very cordial and nice dynamic where I'm able to walk in and, It took a long time for this, Rob, but it almost feels like I'm not walking into federal institution anymore with the incarcerated, because I sit next to them. There was a prison in Massachusetts that I was visiting for 3 years that we would break bread. There would be a group of us, about 10 of us, and we'd sit down and we'd just talk about whatever. It's not motivational speaking. It's inspirational to hear some of their stories and the amazing resources that are being leveraged, that they're leveraging, whether it's work, educational. It's really unique.
And so that building of trust and that kind of relationships with people, is that, is it effective and is it appreciated? And, you know, clearly, I mean, as an advocate for PVS, you want to see more of this, but does there need to be more of this? Is this something that kind of, you know, we've discussed a number of issues from Kenya to the Netherlands today to Spain, and there's a kind of sense that leaving people to themselves and the punitive correctional, because that's a very American way of describing a phrase that's used, which doesn't get used here in the UK to describe, you know, incarceration doesn't get used, but it's there's a focus on a particular form of justice. Whereas the conversation in other places are more about restorative justice and about establishing relationships with the individual and looking for that point of potential transformation of that person to leave that past behind and come along. What, from your experience, you know, how do you, you know, you walk in and meet somebody for the first time, what's your modus operandi for saying, I need to figure out who this person is and what their needs are, and does it go any further than that? Just have a relationship with them, a chat. There's no end point for it. How does that work?
We take direction. The conversation goes within the parameters of our bylaws, the way the inmate wants the conversation to go. We are there to serve them. Whatever they want to talk about. Now, there's things that we don't want to talk about, obviously, that have to meet our bylaws and things like that. But I'm there to serve them. Whatever, let's talk. Let's talk about sports. Let's talk about politics. You know, I don't really like to get into religion, but that's something for me. And politics, I don't like to get into. But if that's something they want to talk about, we talk about. How things going on the outside, you know. But there's a lot of things like we can't move forward with. Like, for example, one inmate told me, hey, Shahzad, can you do me a favor? My son's going to start football and I want him to get these type of training cleats, shoes. Can you please reach out to my ex-wife and make sure that he gets those cleats? Absolutely, I cannot. I cannot do that. So those are some of the parameters and the guardrails that we have to live by. But as far as appreciated, oh, man. It's very self-fulfilling, honestly. And I know that may sound a little bit selfish, because it may sound more like I'm doing it for myself or we're doing it for ourselves from an organization perspective. But you get a lot out of it. You know, I'll tell you, Rob, when I first started with PVS, my first visit, I thought I was going to give a lot. I got more back from the inmates that I gave. That's what I felt. So it's been a great relationship with the Bureau of Prisons, with the inmate population, and with PVS thus far. Very exciting.
So it's more of a listening service. One last question, and Jai, you can jump in. But if somebody tells you something, you've got a protocol for this, no doubt.
Yeah.
But there's a limit to what you can be party to in terms of somebody's conversation. One, not being actively involved in something, but two, somebody unburdening themselves has a potential impact for that person, which might not have been known about or understood. That operates on two levels, doesn't it? One, there's the kind of professional responsibility, but then there's the individual you know, you're not there as a secret keeper. You're there as a listener, but not that relationship. Is that you know, it how does that work? Because we often, I think, in some respects, some jurisdictions build that into the training for things like prison guards and wardens and probation officers and things like that. That's part of their process to be the listeners. Whereas, is this separated from that in the American system?
Well, we are the number one trait that a PVS visitor should have is being an incredible active listener. You know, listen to what the people that we're visiting, what they're saying, and talk about that, right? Like, there's things, of course, that we're not supposed to talk about, and unfortunately, you know, we have to adhere to the bylaws of the Bureau of Prisons. So if we hear something we're not supposed to hear, we can't keep it to ourselves. That's part of active listening. We have to make sure we report it to make sure no one gets hurt or injured, or the dynamics of the Bureau of Prisons doesn't get infected, right? So,
yeah.
Hope I answer your question, Rob.
Yeah, it does. Sheree, any thoughts?
I'm just more interested in how do you finish a visitation relationship, because obviously it would be quite nice in most circumstances for both parties to continue after prison, because to be honest, I think the hardest part is the day when you actually leave and go back home. So it's a lot of work, support and challenges needed. And also maybe, like you said, to see like the positive impact you have. But if you can't do that, and I'm sure you make that really clear at the start of your sessions, is there any kind of rituals or anything that you do to celebrate the finish of the relationship to make it a nice finish?
Yeah, it's a good, very, very thoughtful question. Unfortunately, there really isn't any offboarding procedures. It's a very fluid situation, right? Because, I'll give you guys an example. There's been times where I'll be like, okay, I'm ready to, I have to work with my reentry affairs coordinator from the Bureau of Prisons. Hey, I want to meet so-and-so. Unfortunately, he got released. It's music to my ears, but knowing the infrastructure of what happens in U.S. when inmates get released and the rate of them coming back, it's nice, but then it's like, oh, it's a little worrying some. It's like, I hope that person that I knew that was incarcerated, who had a lot of structure in their life, who had their whole day laid out, and now you break in that structure. You put them out in the free world, you drop them off at the bus stop and expect them to recreate that structure. We all live by structure, right? And the successfulness of people is if we abide by that structure. That structure is broken for these people, and that's why a lot of them return back to prison, because they don't have that structure. They don't know how to adhere to it. It's because they've had it, they were trained for it, and then all those mechanisms and resources for them to be successful while institutionalized are gone, you know?
So yeah.
You don't get that opportunity to reach out to them and say, hey, what can I help you now that you're on the outside? That's done.
Yeah, that's true. I guess working prison often is out of your control. It's very precarious. We have drama workshops that are supposed to be more structured with a performance at the end, but we also get a lot of coming and going, people dropping out themselves or changing wings or get transferred or released. It is impossible it's I guess you just have to treat every day as like appreciate every like current visit meeting. Yeah, thank you.
You do. Yeah, you're welcome. No, you really do. It's a very good point.
What's the response when you're talking to people that and you're advocating for the work that PVS does? What's the climate like there at the moment in the US towards restorative, reform-based, relationship-based change rather than punitive? I'm not saying, we've had this conversation about the difference between reform and punitive punishment. And it's you know, each society sets its own boundaries and terms for this. What's it like for you in the, which part of the US are you in? Which states are you mainly involved in? How does that vary? What's the temperature like at the moment?
The temperature is very fluid right now because of the changes from in the government, you know, that's gone down to the Bureau of Prisons as well. A lot of changing of wardens, a lot of changing of correctional officers, understaffed correctional officers working a lot of hours, crossing into, you know, graveyard shifts and stuff like that. And it's just, it's been an impact, and you see it when you walk into prison. The climate's a little bit different. It's not as cordial anymore. Mm-hmm. It's very functional. Hey, let's get you in, let's get you out, because I've been working for 16 hours straight. You know, so it's taken taxed a lot of the people within the Bureau. And there's a lot of new people coming in too that aren't as experienced. So sometimes I'll walk in. A lot of times, you know, in my tenure within PVS, they know who I am. There's been times where like, oh, what's PVS? Who are you? So that's why something like this, guys, is so, so beneficial. And I'm so appreciative of you guys having us on, because it creates that awareness. And the more people know about these organizations that visit institutions to support inmates, the better off, you know, the better off the society is, I feel.
And do you have links with other other not-for-profit charities, other support groups? Is the work of PVS part of a network of, you know, have you got links with universities and training course colleges and things, or is it just is it seen as a kind of isolated instance of engagement?
Yeah, Rob, I would say it's a little bit isolated. And that's part of our branding strategy that we're trying to implement, is getting a little bit more acceptance, not within the Bureau of Prisons and the institutions, but all over with you know, organizations, with other nonprofits, and start a partnership. But we know that's going to take a little bit of time, right? I mean, you've been on our website and you've seen that it's not the greatest, you know.
A not-for-profit doesn't spend a lot of money on brand and marketing. That's the, you know, everybody knows that who deals with these things, and unless you've got a philanthropist who can fund you well. And I'm always suspicious of those things, that the money's got to go to the end users. So it's, you know, the beneficiaries.
Yes,
not the executive teams running it, but that's a different discussion, isn't it? So it's is there kind of anything that you think would be a message for other, you know, lessons taken up that maybe people in other countries, maybe other jurisdictions might be, you know, kind of find useful? Because I think, you know, I think the main kind of when we look back, we've been sitting here today listening to lots of different speakers. And actually, the same issues are cropping up in different ways across the board. This is a human issue, and the human issues are spread out. They're not confined. We might deal with them differently in different circumstances. Is there kind of anything that you kind of would say would be a lesson for other people, or you would like to learn from other people that would enhance what you do?
Yeah, it's the human instinct, right? We are human beings sent down from God, and we all make mistakes. There's no perfect society. There's no perfect human being, right? So I made plenty of mistakes, and I was very close to getting incarcerated at one point in my life too. So be an advocate, you know. There's a lot of people that live in isolation. And there's a lot of people that are institutionalized that live in isolation. You know, when you meet those people and you could have a conversation with them, objectively, it makes such a big difference. So what I would recommend is, you know, look for those opportunities to go visit an institution. And, you know, Rob, I did a mock fair, a job fair, a couple months ago at the prison that I visit. And you would think there's about five or maybe 10 inmates that would come and be interested in that. We had 70, 80. It may have been even more than that. I just looked at the volume of people and kind of put it in my head that it may be 70 or 80, but all very interested, all had their resumes, all ready, ready to go and find, you know, find work and do something and change their life and their circumstances. Actually, I shouldn't say change your life, change your circumstances. So reach out, you know, find out what ways there are to help these institutions. You know, that would be my guiding light.
And humanize people. I think that's the don't just treat them as fodder for an ideology or fodder for a technical process, but, you know, bring out the human relationship, and everybody's got a point. Hopefully everybody's got a point that they can transform around. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that word, the condemned, right? Like, that just shows that, like, they've been locked away and gone and no one remembers them anymore. And that shouldn't be the case. You know, it should be like, hey, okay, we should go now to them and see what we could support channels there are. We could help them outside of just the Bureau of Prison, right? The people on the outside, how can we help, you know, those people that have accidentally made a mistake and now, you know, see what support we can offer them.
We've spoken in the past, a few years ago now, but in the UK, we have a Prison Radio Association. And I know in the US, there are similar prison radio organizations that either broadcast to
radio,
and it maintains that relationship and it retains that contact with people because it's a simple medium and it's a human medium. I'm an advocate for community media, but it's radio. But it has that kind of, at its heart, it has that thing of kind of, well, you've got to remember you're dealing with people. And everybody has that point where they need some contact with another human who accepts them. I mean, there might be a small proportion of people who don't fit that, but that's so rare, thankfully. Thank you. This has been really fascinating. What we'll do is put the links and a description of the conversation onto the website. Is there anything that you want to add that we wanted to cover that we've maybe not covered yet, or...?
No, I just want to thank you guys again for having me on to represent our amazing organization, PVS. So anything you guys need, any additional information regarding PVS, please reach out. You know,
well, we've got a growing network of contacts in the US. So I think there's just some future things that we can think about in the new year for follow-up podcasts and webinars and things. And we'll be looking for kind of, you know, that experience as well, as not just about academic theories, it's about professional practice, it's about experience, it's about people, you know, kind of rolling their sleeves up and getting involved in doing this and doing it in real life. That's always my motto. So brilliant, thank you. That's so good, thank you.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.